Welcome to Spirits on Spirits, a podcast where we mix ghost stories with a little liquid courage. I'm Aiden.
And I'm Nate.
And together we'll dive into the eerie, the unexplained, and the downright terrifying, all while enjoying a drink or two. Each episode we'll explore haunted places, ghostly encounters, and paranormal mysteries, pairing them with the perfect cocktail to keep our nerves steady. So grab a glass, turn down the lights, and join us as we sip, shiver, and swap some spine-chilling stories. Because here at Spirits on Spirits, the only thing stronger than the ghosts are our drinks.
What up, gourds and gourdettes? We are back here with another episode of Spirits on Spirits. Thank you so much for joining us on our weekly adventure into the paranormal, the Patron-fueled paranormal banter we have here on Spirits on Spirits. We're so glad you guys are joining us. So thank you. Aiden, how are we doing this week?
Doing great.
Nice. Yep. Nice. Yep. Dude, this is... So, before we get into the episode, I think we should just... This is... We are recording right after kind of the Spotify Wrapped of the year came out. And, you know, we just... We're looking at some of our statistics, and we just wanted to say thank you so much for all of you that, you know, give some of your time to us and, you know... We know everyone's busy. Life is full of things and different options when it comes to media and entertainment and all this stuff. So we are just so very grateful that, you know, every single one of you has, you know, filled some of your time with our podcast. So we really appreciate it. We do this for you guys. We get so happy when, you know, we hear and see that you guys are enjoying our content and, you know, just interacting with us. So. You know, from the bottom of our hurts, from the bottom of our hurts here on Spirits, thank you so, so much.
Yeah, we're genuinely not like statistic driven at all. Like, no. We just do it for the love of the game. But seeing some of the numbers, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, no. I expected to be exactly zero people's number one podcast.
Yeah.
And we had like a bunch.
Yeah.
So I was like, whoa.
No, it was cool. It was cool. It just, it's a reminder. You know, we very much are like, yeah, no one would listen to us. Like, why was anyone listen to us? So, you know, the fact that you guys actually take some time out of your week to sit down and, you know, whether it be have a cocktail with us or just listen to the stories or however you choose to enjoy us, we are so very appreciative. So thank you very much. We will keep the episodes coming. And you know, as long as we got one fan, we will continue to make our show. So, you know, we appreciate you all. So
agreed.
Cool. All right. Well, let's get into it for the week.
We get into it.
Yeah.
So I have one little tidbit. So I believe that in our first episode, we did the Hawthorne Hotel as one of our locations, right?
No.
Oh, did we not?
No, we didn't do the Hawthorne Hotel.
I feel like I had researched the Hawthorne for that episode. And
yes,
and then we like I changed stories.
I got you, because you did the tunnels and I did Bunghole Liquors.
Right.
Yes, no, you didn't do the. Well, you did the tunnels and you did multiple spots connected to the tunnels.
Right.
Yes, yeah. And I did Bunghole Liquors.
Yeah. So we did not do the Hawthorne, but I did for that episode. I had researched the Hawthorne Hotel.
Got you.
So I went to the Hawthorne Hotel for a little beverageino last night.
Nice.
And this story has two parts. So there's the spirits,
ooh,
and there's the spirits.
Nice.
So when you open their like menu for food and drink, the last page is their like haunted history.
Ooh.
So I got to read all the stuff that I'd researched. But
that's
like
so cool.
It's super cool that they like talk about.
Yeah, they like lean into
the most haunted room, the most haunted floor, like all the stories,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. The other side of the story is the spirits.
Yeah.
And they are hefty horrors. But we went on it was a Saturday. And there was a wedding.
Whoa.
At the Hawthorne.
Nice.
When we were there. We left like as the wedding was letting out and people were like kind of filing into the lobby.
Yeah.
When I say that this was the drunkest like large party of people that I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh,
like
wow.
One girl sitting on the couch in the lobby, like genuinely like nothing going on behind the FBI.
Nothing going on. Oh my gosh.
It was like, oh my God.
Like people were hammered.
But this is my warning to the people listening. If you ever go to the Hawthorne for beverages, or if you ever have a wedding at the Hawthorne, make sure that you warn everybody getting drinks that they are hefty pourers and to really monitor their level of drunkenness.
Why, did you get slammered?
No, I only had one there, but it was like my fiance got a Corpse Survivor, I got an Old Fashioned.
Gotcha.
They were both like...
like strong.
Like big boys.
Big boys? Nice. Big boys. That's so funny. So, yeah, I definitely want to go. I actually don't think I've ever stepped foot in there.
It's a nice little, like, I wish that there hadn't been a wedding because it was so loud. Oh, the rooms are right next to each other.
Got you.
And it was just, like, the loudest bass that I've ever heard. But, yeah, like, I would go back on, like a Thursday or Friday or something. Nice. For, you know, a non-wedding day.
Sure.
And just get a beverage.
Nice. Yeah. That's fair. Cool. Yeah.
Nice. So, that is my, but yeah, little haunted location in our town that I went and visited last night and had the haunted history and had the spirits and whoa.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So.
There you go. All right, well, we're not staying in Salem, are we?
We are not.
Where are we headed?
We're going down a couple hours south to Hartford, Connecticut.
Hartford, Connecticut. Have you ever been to Hartford?
I feel like I've driven through Hartford.
Okay.
But I don't think I've ever, like, stopped and, like, taken in the scenery.
Got you.
Yeah.
I have a couple of times. I had a friend in high school who lived in Hartford. So I had taken the bus down once, and then I think driven to their house or someone else's house at Hartford a second time. It's definitely an interesting city.
Mm-hmm.
The bus station is definitely an interesting location. So it's funny, when I did research, someone had told me that the state house, the like Hartford State House, used to be a mental institution. Upon my research, that is not the case. So yeah, but I always like thought that that was like, I always, when we were talking about locations, like, oh, what about Hartford? Keep it New England. I also think this time of year, Christmas, like cold, like just my brain is very like New England based. Yeah. So I was like, oh, like I'll do the state house that used to be a mental institution. And I was like, nope, not the case at all. But yeah, so I always like grew up thinking that there was some paranormal stuff there. And upon some research, there definitely is some paranormal stuff there. Yeah. But just not the paranormal stuff I thought.
I'm actually really excited about my location.
I'm excited to hear it. My one just quick story about Hartford, Connecticut. You know what? Never mind. Let's save some time. Not going to get into it. Let's just head into our story. So, or actually, wait.
Yeah, we got to get into the beverage.
We're forgetting the second part of Spirits on Spirits. What's the beveragio this week?
So, there was a few different options. We could have done a Moscow Mule. Oh, we've already done the Moscow Mule.
Yeah.
We could have done a Dark and Stormy. We've already done a Dark and Stormy. I want to try and avoid duplicating
as
long as I can.
Yeah, you can't repeat.
So, this week we're doing the Brass Monkey.
Ooh, what is that?
So, it's an ounce of vodka and rum, and then top it off with orange juice, and then garnish with either an orange peel or a cherry.
Fun?
Yeah.
Fun. So, it's like an extra boozy screwdriver. Yeah. Basically. That's so fun. Well, cheers to that.
Cheers. Basically just a screwdriver.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Is it good?
Yeah, it is good.
Nice. You got like a good ice cube in there too.
Yeah, I've got the like old fashioned like rocks.
Nice.
Rocks cube in there.
Nice. Dude, I got Secret Santa got someone who likes whiskey, and I got them a nice whiskey glass. Like, that was, like, my...
Like a Waterford Crystal, or...
Simon & Pierce.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, they're going to enjoy that one, so...
That's awesome.
Cool. All right, well, without further ado, what's the story this week? Let's get into it.
So, we are heading to the Mark Twain House.
Ooh.
Yeah. I didn't even know that he lived there, if I'm being honest, before I started researching for this episode.
No, I knew he was a Massachusetts guy at one point, too, correct?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know, to be honest. I don't know where else he lived.
We could title this podcast or have a second podcast called, like, Loose History Facts, because we're both like, I think, and then the other one's like, yeah, I don't know.
That would actually be fun.
But he was part of the Transcendentalism movement, right?
Sure.
Yeah, he definitely was.
That's a type of writing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, type of writing or type of philosophy?
Oh, it is a type of philosophy.
You're right. I think of them as being, like, woodsy type people and shit like that.
Yeah, I mean, he lived in a city, yeah, so I don't know how woodsy he
was. But they would go to the woods. They're like, this is where I feel complete.
I mean, he wrote a lot of his books here, like,
basically,
in the city.
What I think the transcendentalist philosophers were just guys that were rich enough to have, like, a cabin somewhere.
Yeah.
And they'd just go sit in the cabin and be like, this is where I feel good. And then write.
Everyone needs to get out here.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, other people are like, I can't buy food.
No,
so.
I'm a coal miner or, like, a chimney sweep. The rest of us are living in
Must be nice.
Yeah.
Mark.
Mark.
All right. Let's get into it. On a cool Hartford evening, the Mark Twain House doesn't look like a place of terror. It looks like something from a storybook. It's a red brick Gothic mansion with gables, tall chimneys, and a long porch that wraps around it. If you arrive for a ghost tour, the first thing that you'll notice is the quiet. Even with a group around you, the neighborhood seems muffled. A guide unlocks the door, and you step into Mark Twain's home. Once one of the liveliest houses in Hartford, now one of its most haunted. When Samuel Clemens, better known as Mark Twain, and his wife Olivia decided to settle in Hartford in the early 1870s...
I'm sorry. Mark Twain wasn't his name?
No, it was Samuel Clemens. You didn't know that?
No, and he changed it?
Yeah.
Why?
Mark Twain had a better sound to it.
What a poser.
Most people had what do they call them? Pen names.
I guess. That's weird to me, though, that people, like, change their, like, I guess it's the same thing with, like, rappers, where it's like.
And, like, every musical art, like, you think that Lana Del Rey is her fucking name?
No, that's fair. That's fair. But I think it's just. I just think it's funny. Where it's
Hannah,
like,
Montana?
Well,
that's
okay.
Not her name.
Obviously, that wasn't her name. That was a fake person. I think with authors, it's silly. Because it's like, I get it when it's like, okay, Lil Gunshot is going to sell more albums than, like, Bob Stanley.
Can you imagine, though, if that was like that? Like, someone looked at a baby and was like, I'm going to name you Lil Gunshot
Dude.
Williams.
Okay. Yep. We're bordering on, like, sounding insensitive and stuff like that. It's like the fucking Key and Peele, where it's like they make up the names.
Oh, yeah. East versus West Bowl.
There's
the
dude in the NFL now named
The Coolest.
Kool-Aid. It's like his
name. Oh, yeah. Kool-Aid.
Yes.
But there is a De Coolest, right?
Yes, there's a couple that you're like, huh. So
fun fact, in college, I had a hamster, and I named him DeBrickishaw.
Yeah.
After DeBrickishaw Ferguson, who was in the NFL as well. But I digress. Clemens wanted something bold, unusual. A house that looked as dramatic as the life that he meant to live. Oh my god, I'm like,
yeah.
In 1873, the couple hired New York architect Edward Tuckerman Potter to design their dream home in the fashionable Nook Farm neighborhood. Construction began that same year. Potter gave them a showpiece. It was a 25-room Victorian mansion, all steep roofs, asymmetrical bays, and elaborate woodwork. Contemporary papers commented on the novelty and oddity of the house. Inside, the house was even more extravagant. Dark carved wood, ornate mantels, stained glass, and textured surfaces turned the interior into a kind of theatrical set. This was not just a home. It was a statement that Mark Twain had arrived. The house sat among like-minded neighbors. Nook Farm was a progressive little enclave. Harriet Beecher Stowe, who authored Uncle Tom's Cabin, lived right next door, and other residents included reformers, writers, and politicians. Hartford was booming, and Clemens called it the most beautiful city that he had ever seen. The house on Farmington Ave would be the heart of his world for the next 17 years. The Clemens family moved in for good in 1874. For a time, the mansion rang with laughter, music, and the clack of billiard balls upstairs. Here, in the third floor billiard room that doubled as his study, Clemens wrote many of the works that made him immortal. The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, The Prince and the Pauper, Life on the Mississippi, Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, A Tramp Abroad, and A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, among others. Kind of wild. Like, that's a lot of books to be written in this house.
Absolutely.
A lot of big ones, too.
Yeah.
He worked late.
Oh, yeah, he was Huck Finn.
He was Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, he was all those.
Prince and the Pauper.
I forgot that. So I have read one of his books.
I read multiple.
Which ones did you read?
I read Huck Finn. I read Tom Sawyer.
We had to read Huck Finn at school, right?
Yeah. You didn't read Tom Sawyer?
I don't believe so.
I think that's the one where he's like, he has to paint a fence. And then I want to say he like helps a slave run away. Or he runs away and a slave helps him.
That was Huck Finn. Jim.
Oh. What's Tom Sawyer?
I don't know. I think Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer were like boys. I think.
Yeah, you're right, you're right, you're right.
But like they were in the same universe.
But I read both of those. I know I read both.
Got you.
I just don't remember what Tom Sawyer was about. It was a long time ago.
Fair.
He worked late into the night under the sloped ceiling, laying pages on the billiard tables as he wrote. He'd come downstairs to the grand dining room to hold court with guests, then retreat again to his stories of boys on rafts and time-traveling Yankees. Olivia, or Livy, reigned over the household with gentle precision. She edited his manuscripts, corrected his grammar, and ran the staff of servants that kept the 11,500-square-foot house humming. That's a huge house.
That's a boa. Boa.
It is a boa.
Boa.
Oh yeah, it's not a boa. It's a ball.
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 Ball. Big ass house.
Their daughters, Susie, Clara, and Jean, played in the halls, slid along banisters, and turned the bedrooms into theaters for homemade plays. One important presence moved quietly through it all. George Griffin, the family's butler. A formerly enslaved man, George became a trusted member of the household, managing the staff, smoothing over conflicts in the kitchen, and sharing friendly bets with Clemens over billiards.
Dude, to have a pool hall in your house is fucking sick.
Super cool.
Like, that's so cool.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Twain described him as wise, calm, and endlessly good-natured. On winter evenings, the house glowed. Guests arrived in carriages, chandeliers lit, music from the drawing room, cigar smoke curling in the billiard room. It is hard standing in those same rooms today not to feel the golden age pressing close, like the echo of a party just out of sight. But the story of the Mark Twain house is not just one of success. Like many grand Victorian homes, its history bends toward heartbreak. Clemens was a brilliant writer, but a disastrous investor. He poured a fortune into a mechanical typesetting machine and other ventures that failed catastrophically. By the early 1890s, he was deeply in debt. Poor investments in the panic of 1893 pushed the family to leave Hartford in 1891 and live more cheaply in Europe, while Twain undertook grueling lecture tours to pay back what he owed. and the house on Farmington Avenue stayed behind, waiting. Then came the blow that Clemens never truly recovered from. In August of 1896, his beloved eldest daughter, Olivia Susan, known as Susie, returned to Hartford and fell ill with spinal meningitis.
Oh.
She was only 24.
That sounds...
miserable.
Not... What is meningitis?
I think it's like it's some sort of infection.
Ew.
It's gross.
In her spine?
In her spine.
Yikes.
And she was 24.
Ew. A tough one. She's like... That's a tough age. Because you're not young enough where, like... St. Jude's isn't helping you out anymore, but you're also not old enough where it, like, makes sense. You're just at this, like, awkward, like, teen phase of medicine where it's like, oh, it's a kid that got sick, aw, versus, oh, it's an old person that got sick. It's just like, ew, you look gross. Like,
oh, my God.
That's a tough age.
As her fever worsened, she was moved into her parents' mahogany bed in the master bedroom of the Hartford house. The family's Irish maid, Katie Leary, kept vigil on a sofa nearby. Susie gradually lost her weight, slipped into delirium, and finally into a coma. She died in that bed on August 18th, 1896.
Ooh,
Twain and Livy were abroad when a cable reached them with the news. He later wrote of the house, "Our house is become a cemetery, but not in a repellent sense. Our dead are welcome there. We shall have them with us always, and there will be no parting." But for all that bittersweet sentiment, they could not bear to live there again. The Clemens family never returned to reside in the Hartford home. Eventually, in 1903, they sold it. After the Clemens family left, the mansion's glory faded. It passed through different hands. At various times, it served as a school, as apartments, and as a branch of the Hartford Public Library.
Whoa.
Which is super cool.
That is really cool.
Layers of paint and partitions obscured Potter's original design. The ornate interiors deteriorated. Interiors deteriorated. Say that five times fast.
Interior deteriorate. Interior deteriorate. Interior deteriorate. Interior deteriorate. Interior deteriorate. Interior deteriorate.
You didn't say deteriorate right a single time.
Yes, I did. What? No, what do you mean?
You said deteriorate.
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 Yeah.
How do you say deteriorate?
Deteriorate.
Deteriorate. Nope. Deteriorate. Interior deteriorate. Nope. Yeah. All right. Fair.
That one was correct.
Yeah, but it like felt like my mouth, like your mouth opens up and it's like deteriorate. Yeah.
Tiffany surfaces dulled and woodwork cracked. By the late 1920s, there was serious talk of demolition. That might have been the end of the story, but Hartford had not forgotten its most famous resident. Catherine Seymour Day, grandniece of Harriet Beecher Stowe, rallied preservationists and founded the organization that became the Mark Twain Memorial.
Oh.
In 1929, they raised funds to secure the property and save it from destruction, which is impressive because that was the year of the Great Depression.
Wow.
So,
raising money during the Depression.
Pretty impressive stuff. Restoration took decades, from the 1950s into the 1970s. From the 1950s into the 1970s, craftsmen peeled back intrusive alterations, reconstructed missing woodwork, repaired slate roofs, and hunted down original furnishings. Finally, in 1974, the house opened as a museum just in time for its 100th anniversary.
That's cool.
Today, the Mark Twain House and Museum holds some 50,000 artifacts, manuscripts, photographs, furniture, Tiffany glass, It offers guided tours through the rooms where Twain lived, wrote, and grieved. But
doesn't he hold the record for the most times, like, the N-word is said in a book?
Yeah, I want to say Huck Finn has it, right?
Yeah, I think it does. That's crazy.
But as staff and visitors soon discovered, the restoration may have awakened more than just the architecture. So, officially, the museum is careful. Ask a staff member and you'll get a balanced answer. Some employees have never experienced anything. Others have stories that they'll never forget. In 2009, the Smoking Gun Research Agency, a Connecticut-based paranormal group, conducted an overnight investigation.
Wait, that's the name of their research agency, the Smoking Gun.
Yeah, Smoking Gun Research Agency is their name.
That's a cool one. That probably doesn't fit very well on t-shirts, though.
No, but they've probably got a really cool
like logo. Yeah. Dude, like it's a gun with the smoke coming out as a ghost.
Oh, dude.
Dave, you're welcome, Smoking Gun Agency. Yeah.
Pay us royalties.
Yeah.
They conducted an overnight investigation after the museum had logged several reports of unexplained activity from visitors. They found the house energetically active, noting knocks, bangs, mysterious voices, shifting shadows, and phantom cigar smells. That same year, TV's Ghost Hunters filmed an episode inside the mansion.
No friggin' way.
They sent multiple teams through with cameras and EMF detectors. Their equipment recorded odd knocks, unexplained shadow movement, and spikes in electromagnetic fields. The show returned twice more, once for Ghost Hunters Academy, which, by the way, I had no idea was a thing until I researched this.
What is this?
Ghost Hunters Academy. I'm assuming it's
like
they're training other paranormal.
Dude, how do we get on this show?
That would be sick.
Like, I think someone should bring us along for a ghost adventure.
Like, train a ride along?
Yeah, I want to do a ride along on a ghost adventure. I actually don't. Like, I say that sitting here on this couch. And
it's not ghost adventures. It's ghost hunters.
No, I know, but still. Yeah. I just, like, the idea of, it sounds really cool. Like, oh, I think I would enjoy that. And then the second it's pitch black, you're in some creaky old house, and someone's like, all right, we're going to ask this thing if it wants to hurt us. And I'll be like, nope, I'm good. I'm all set.
No, I'd love it.
I don't know if I would. I actually watched the ghost show last night.
Oh, what'd you watch?
I watched, it's called Expedition X. It's on Discovery Channel. Have you ever seen Josh Gates, like, Expedition Unknown?
No.
It's very, like, quintessential. It's on Discovery, but that very, like, you remember, like, when we were in middle school and high school, like, just those History Channel shows where it's like, here's this thing, and, like, we're going to go investigate it type of thing, like, and stuff like that. So they did the Bridgewater Triangle.
Ooh, cool, yeah.
I didn't know anything about that.
Oh, really?
I knew nothing about that, so.
Two Girls, One Ghost did an episode or two on it.
That's cool.
It's pretty cool.
I think, never mind. It's all love in the podcast game, man. It's all love. It's all love.
I love their podcast.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to get in the way, but I think we should go ghost hunting. I want to do it one of these times.
We should.
Like, go for an hour someplace.
We should do the Hawthorne, because they have a specific haunted room.
We got to get the equipment. We got to get the, like, we have the one thing already.
Yeah, the EMF reader,
yes.
I think. Yeah.
We got to get, like, a spirit box, though.
Yeah, spirit box. We got to get, like, cameras.
Yeah, we should just get normal cameras first and then take the rest of it from there.
But yeah, so they returned twice. Once was for their Ghost Hunters Academy, and once was for a Christmas special. They were drawn back, they said, by the house's persistent activity. Today, the museum leans into the reputation with its graveyard shift ghost tours. Nighttime walks through the dim rooms that focus on Victorian spiritualism, the tragedies of the Clemens family, and the paranormal experiences reported by staff and guests. So now we'll get into some of the, like, specific ghosts and hauntings. So the most poignant ghost in the house is said to be Susie herself. Visitors and staff have reported seeing a young woman in a white Victorian dress moving silently along the hallway or standing near bedroom doors, particularly in the area of her old room and the master bedroom where she died. Sometimes it's just a suggestion, like a flicker of a whiter than shadow in the corner of the eye. Other times, guides tell of a clear figure that seems solid for a moment, then vanishes when someone calls out. In Susie's former room, some tours report odd behavior from children, like unprompted giggles, a sense that their hair...
But she wasn't a child.
No, but she was young.
She was 24.
Maybe she's, like, playing with...
She was paying her own tax. Like, she had her own health insurance. No, she didn't. She didn't. She had two more 26. Years.
26.
That's what I was saying. She's at this just awkward age of, like, ugh, like, what do you, like, you just feel... You're like, that's not supposed to happen to you.
No,
like,
it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I guess she's, I don't know, she's playing around with the kids.
I guess, yes. She could have had kids. Back in the 1900s, like, she should have been married with her own kids. Should have had 5 kids by then. Meanwhile, she's got a spine infection.
Why are you dogging on her for this? I don't know.
It's not her fault. I don't know. That's actually, no, that's, I just, I don't know. I feel really bad for her.
Yeah, you're showing it in a very interesting
no,
way.
I don't know why. I feel bad. Because again, like, I think, I'm thinking about it how everyone would look at it. So I just feel bad that that's like the, like, and she was alone. Her parents were in Europe.
Well, dude, you're over here like, oh, what a weirdo.
No, I'm
getting
sorry.
A spinal infection at 24.
I am sorry. I feel really bad for her. I feel especially bad that she's just like in Europe and someone just heaves her into her parents' bed and just like lets her just like rot away in there.
Yeah.
That's weird. You're like, oh, this is my parents' bed. Like, and I'm.
Yeah, I really doubt that in that moment she was like caring about what bed she was in.
Oh.
Back to the odd behavior from children.
I feel bad. Oh, wait. She, okay, hold on. I'm changing, not changing my opinion, but I misinterpreted that. I thought you said she was giggling and running
around.
Oh,
no, no, no. Like live children who go into this
okay, so she's just like, yeah, she's just like a young soul that's
like.
That's
what I'm saying.
Okay, I thought she was like, hee-hee, and like running around. I'm like, all right, you're 24, lady. Calm down.
No,
like,
no,
yeah.
She's causing kids to have these behaviors.
Gotcha. They're like the nice little woman in the corner wave to me or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Because kids can see things that adults can't.
Gotcha.
But they have a sense that their hair is being slightly tugged or a sudden desire to wave at an empty corner, like you just said.
Wow, I actually did that.
You pegged that, yeah.
Perfectly.
Adults standing quietly in the doorway have heard childlike laughter when the rest of the group has already moved on. Is it?
Oh, so that is
her
laughing.
Her laughing
like a child.
Well, it's just like she's playing with the kids
after the kids have left.
Dude, you know what? She died a pretty miserable death. Yeah. I'll give her the.
We'll give her a pass.
Yeah, we'll
All
give
right,
her a pass
fair,
on this one.
Fair.
Now on to George Griffin. Among the mansion's most beloved.
Wait, can I stop you real quick? Because I'm actually thinking about this now, where it's like everyone's like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I would so much rather live during like the 1920s or like the 1950s and shit like that. It's like, no, because people had to worry about spine infections and coughs and shit like.
That was like the. Was it the Spanish flu or the yellow fever or something that was, like, running rampant?
All of them. How about all of them just existed?
That was the other, like, it's every 100 years they have a pandemic.
Yes.
And one of them in the 1920s was, like, awful.
Yes.
Awful.
100%. It's like, we don't have to worry about any of that shit. I mean, COVID happened, but when COVID happened, we're like, this isn't a thing that happens. People get sick across the globe. Like, that was something that always happened back then. And we don't have to deal with that. And meanwhile, oh, I'm dying in my parents' bed while they're in Europe. Oh, I want them to come home. The telegram's going to take 3 months for them to, like, get this message. It's like, yeah, no, I'm much rather live right now.
Yeah, I agree. But so now we'll move on to George Griffin. So among the mansion's most beloved ghost stories is that of George Griffin, who was the butler who kept
the Griffmeister?
Dude, the Griffmeister himself. Oh. GG.
GG?
Kept Mark Twain's complex household running.
Nice.
People sometimes catch sight of a tall black man in period clothing standing quietly near the main staircase or behind a tour guide on the third floor, watching the group with a calm, assessing gaze. When they look twice, he's gone.
Whoa.
Given George's role in life, the steady, peacekeeping, protective role, it makes a certain emotional sense that he would continue to look after the home and its visitors.
Oh, that's very nice of him.
It is very nice of him. Some staff say that when they lock up at night, if they speak out loud to ask that the house be kept safe, they feel a particular warmth on the stairs, as though someone approves. Others have
got you.
I got you, fam. Others have heard the faint click of billiard balls from the third floor when the room is empty and roped off, as though Twain and George are still settling bets after hours.
Huh. It's fun that they were like, he was his butler, but also like his friend.
Yeah, they were boys.
Yeah.
Now on to a certain, like, sensory thing that happens.
Ooh.
So one of the most common and eerie reports from the Mark Twain house is the smell of cigar smoke.
Nice.
Especially in the library, the billiard room, and certain hallways. Twain was a legendary smoker, sometimes going through as many as 40 cigars a day.
Oh!
Isn't that insane?
My gosh.
That's so many cigars.
That's so many cigars. Cigars take so long to...
Also...
He must have just always had one in his mouth.
Just always had one, like Winston Churchill or something. But also, talk about, like, the most, like, rich people habit to have.
Uh-huh.
Like, I couldn't afford to do 40 cigars a day.
40, like, let's say they cost, back then, let's say they cost, what, 5 cents a cigar?
Yeah.
Maybe, right?
I feel like that's reasonable.
So, 40 times 5 is...
200.
200, so he's spending $2 a day. But that's a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
And then that times 365
that's crazy.
Is, a, like, that's a large, but no wonder he had to go on that speaking tour throughout Europe, or lecture tour. He was like, I can't fucking...
He had to fund his cigar
habit.
Guides on tours have described walking through the house when the air is perfectly clear, no open windows, no guests nearby, when suddenly the heavy, unmistakable tang of cigar smoke envelops them. I will say, on this piece, I could also totally see just like sheer amount of cigars that were smoked in that house just like lingering for hundreds of years. You know, like...
Oh, yeah, because there was so many. Like, 40
cigars a day?
Yeah, like,
and
that
you,
is...
And you think that it's not going to, like, stay in the walls?
That wood keeps that, like, that. Yeah, absolutely.
So that could just be, like, a physical thing. But then a few steps later, the smell will vanish. Smoking is strictly forbidden inside the museum, and staff are quick to check for any possible living culprit. There never seems to be one. On the graveyard shift tours, this phenomenon is simply presented as one more piece of the puzzle. If thought and personality linger, is it any surprise that a man who's so fond of cigars might leave that habit imprinted on the air? And then there's one place in the Mark Twain house where visitors most often feel something, and it's the main staircase. It's a sweeping wood-paneled spine that links the floors together. Photographs of the staircase often show it empty and serene, but staff say it can feel crowded, as if unseen people are moving up and down it, brushing past the living. Guests have reported hearing disembodied voices near the landings, just at the edge of comprehension, like a conversation in the next room. Others describe seeing someone at the top of the stairs, perhaps a woman in white, perhaps a man in 19th century clothing, only to find no one there when they climb up. On a ghost tour, when you pause halfway up and look down into the darkened hall, you can almost believe you're standing in a place where time folds over itself, footsteps layered on footsteps, voices layered on voices. And
whoa.
That is the Mark Twain house.
That's crazy.
So what do you think? Haunted or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think those two entities are particularly... ingrained in the house for different reasons. And I think, like you said, like similar to the cigar smoke, that doesn't just go away. I don't think that energy goes away. Like, I think that stays for a while.
Yeah, I would agree. I would go on it as well. I feel like just like with it being such a lively place, like anytime that there's like a lot of energy during when people live there, I feel like there's a good chance it's haunted if people have died there too.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So, do you have a poem?
I do, yes.
I'm very excited to hear.
Alright, so this is a bit of a longer one.
I'm excited.
But it's called Cloud Chasing in the Afterlife. Yo, I'm walking through this abandoned hallway, dust floating like sad confetti. Sad confetti, and suddenly I hear it. a rip, a sizzle, a skirpsh, like someone's microwaving a Capri Sun. I turn, and there he is, a ghost, a bro, a ghost vape influencer hovering midair like a human fog machine that died doing what it loved. He's got a backwards hat that only exists because of unfinished business. He's got a tank top that says Rise and Vape in Comic Sans. He's glowing, but like douchebag glowing, LED light bulb energy. He looks at me, winks, and says, yo, 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 what up? Vapor Knots, welcome back to another heavenly cloud drop. No cameras, no subscribers, just pure haunted confidence. He raises his vape, a giant spectral box mod with skull stickers and a knob leveled maximum disrespect. He inhales deep, like he's about to summon a dragon or at least a lawsuit. Then he unleashes a cloud so thick the ancestors file a complaint. The smoke goes straight through him, out his back, and forms the shape of a question mark because even the vapor is confused about his life choices. He nods at me like he solved world hunger. Yeah, bro. That's called the ethereal rip. Patent pending. He tried blowing O's. Tries so hard, but the rings pass through the floor and hits another ghost downstairs who yells, bro, stop dropping your mid-vapes in my room. He's unfazed, due to just his non-existent chain, and says, check this out. I'm about to do the vape tornado of eternal masculinity. He spins in the air once, twice, 12 times, and then flings himself into a grandfather clock and phases through it like a Windows XP screensaver glitch. He floats back, pretending it was on purpose. Bro, that was a collab. Clock ghosts love me. Then he ends his performance, TED Talk, delusion, by pointing finger guns at me. Transparent, pointless finger guns. If you're trying to vibe in the afterlife, hit the subscribe button in your soul. And remember, stay lifted, stay gifted, and never let death kill your drip. There you go.
Word.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That was beautiful, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That was longer than normal, but I felt like that was a good one.
Yeah,
that
was good.
Yeah. Oh, man.
All right. Should we reload and then get back at it?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Cool. All right. Herbs.
So, you remember how I said that I thought the State House was an old insane asylum?
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out it was not. Or at least based on my research, I couldn't find that it was.
Yeah.
So then I was like, kind of like, okay, like I'm determined to do an asylum or a mental institution. So I was like, let me find one. Let me see if Hartford has any. And they did. They had one. It is called the Institute of Living. So it was originally So, it's definitely insensitive, but, like, old-timey names for mental institutions were crazy.
Yeah.
Like, this was called the Hartford Retreat for the Insane, was, like, the original name for it. And then they changed it to the Institute of Living.
It's a little nicer.
Definitely a little nicer. And the funny part is, like, this, even at the time, and I'll get into it in my story, was meant to be a way more, enjoyable place. Like, it wasn't, like, lobotomies.
The worst.
Yeah, like, this wasn't the worst. But, like, even still, they're like, we're going to have a place where people can come and, like, you know, enjoy themselves and, you know, get some treatment that's, like, in nature and stuff like that. And they're like, cool, what do you want to call it? Well, it's kind of a retreat for the insane. And you're like, okay, I guess.
Oh, where do you work? Yeah. Oh, I work at the Retreat for the Insane. Oh, that sounds great, dude. Nice.
Oh, man. So, all right. It was founded in 1822. It was opened in 1824 as the Connecticut Retreat for the Insane. Again, later called the Hartford Retreat. It was one of the earliest psychiatric retreat institutions in the U.S., and it was founded with a moral treatment philosophy, which meant that a key part of their mission was conversation, exercise, and then like a restful grounds.
I'm wondering, like, is it like the for the rich?
Probably.
Yeah, it sounds like it's for the rich.
Yeah, like so and so has like the Kennedy daughter.
Yeah, like you send, like as a rich person, you send your kid.
Yeah.
To this place.
Yes, because this was back before they understood mental illness and all that stuff. So they're like, oh, so-and-so needs to go to the loony bin and then, like, send them here and stuff like that. So, so the story kind of picks up again in 1860 when Frederick Law Olmsted and associates were engaged to design the grounds. The campus was intentionally park-like to support restorative treatment. The property originally covered dozens of acres and include airing courts, walking paths, and specimen trees. This Frederick Law Olmsted, you know how we actually, it's funny you bring that up because I actually didn't connect the dots, but I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. Absolutely a place for the rich because they're not bringing this guy in unless...
Yeah.
Frederick Law Olmsted designed Central Park.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So he did Central Park and the Retreat for the Insane.
What a resume.
What a resume. So over the time, the retreat expanded facilities and changed names as its scope broadened. In the 1930s and 1940s, the institution adopted names reflecting professional psychiatric care. In the 1943, settled on the Institute of Living. Programs and facilities grew, residential cottages, recreation, research, all that kind of stuff. In the mid-20th century, there was kind of an evolution of care. The Institute moved from long-term custodial care to short-term, more clinical treatment models. Bed counts and average length of stay declined across the late 20th century in line with national psychiatric trends. So instead of just, like, shipping people off, they were...
Yeah, that's like, how, you know, like, it should be.
Like, you have a mental health episode, you go there, kind of get
the help you need.
Yeah, get the help you need, and then you get out. Yes, absolutely. I have a story related to that after. Merger in modern era. So in 1994, merger with Hartford's Hospital Psychiatric Department integrated the Institute of the Living into Hartford Healthcare. Today, the IOL is a functioning modern psychiatric center offering inpatient care, outpatient programs, specialty clinics, and educational programs. So it is not an abandoned asylum, which I think makes it the reason I included that kind of like, oh, it's still all blah, blah, because it's not abandoned. So people can't just go in here. We aren't able to like ghost hunt. So no one's ghost hunted here. So all the stories and stuff like that are from the people that have
organic.
Yes, worked there, stayed there, all that kind of stuff. So, just kind of a note, has a long, sometimes complicated institutional history. Obviously, treatment approaches back in the early days were not good by any sort of modern standard. And how institutions handled certain populations in the 20th century, but also has a legacy of innovation in psychiatric care, still an active clinical campus. So I think, I don't know, I was very fascinated by the fact that this, again, controversial history in the sense, or not controversial, complicated. Because while they were still archaic, they were a visionary and kind of like, ahead of the time with their approach. So even though they were calling it the Retreat for the Insane and still treating these people as second-class citizens, they were still like, well, yeah, you guys are second-class citizens, but we're going to treat you better than everyone else is
treating.
Yeah,
they're still a level above all of the other places.
Yeah, absolutely. So that added, I think that affects the energy, I think, to some extent, because, you know, the people that were working there believed in something other than like, no, you guys need to be punished for being certain way and stuff like that. So I do think when we get into the haunted, I think that was important, at least to my understanding.
Yeah.
So let's get into the ghosts. So I want to start with like the recurring kind of phenomena, and then get into, like, the named entities. So the things that are most commonly reported were cold spots slash bad energy in older wings or courtyards. So in the oldest parts, like in the parts that maybe were where certain activities happened, there was, again, bad energy and stuff like that.
That makes sense.
Footsteps, doors, lights, and mechanical noises, and apparently empty corridors or basements. Shadow figures seen at the edge of vision or walking down halls, described generically as shadow people. So we have a couple, but like more than the specific named entities, we are seeing these specific figures. Audible whispering slash weeping. There's this one specific tree on the grounds near a courtyard that they held certain treatments or walks to or like, you know, congregation around. And it is said that people can still hear like a crying and weeping at this tree that they, the patients would kind of gather around and stuff like that. Yeah. And then I just the generic sense of being followed or watched. So
creepy.
Yeah. Creepy.
No thanks.
No friggin' thanks. So, all right, let's get into the specific named entities. So, the matron is the first one. So she's a woman in white, and she's described as a female figure in old-fashioned clothes, often white, and people often see her in corridors or near the older wings, sometimes described as floating or walking around and stuff like that. So this one, there's some debate whether we think patient or person that worked there.
Kind of sounds nurse,
right,
to me.
I agree. So maybe, so there's another one. There's the night nurse, so the nurse at the foot of the bed. So staff often report a nurse walking around and feeling watched by someone standing at the foot of their beds in old staff dormitories. So these accounts circulate among ex-employees in forums in oral lore. So maybe those are the same entity. So there's a woman that's standing at, like, people are waking up in the staff portion of the building where they sleep and stuff like that to someone standing over their bed. And that is described as a night nurse. So maybe this is the same entity, just in two different manifestations.
Yeah, I can see it.
Interesting. And then the shadow patient. So a tall, dark, human-shaped shadow seen walking through halls, disappearing when looked at directly. And he's frequently reported at night by visitors to the abandoned slash closed areas of the campus. So the unique thing about this shadow patient is there was some maybe thought about him being someone that was trying to escape, because every time you look directly at him, he disappears. So you can only see him out of your peripheral, and then you would turn and gone. So like that is a consistent account with him. So people have speculated that potentially he was someone trying to escape. I don't know.
Or just could be like, I don't know. I mean, but it's like the same shape every time.
Yeah, like people describe like it being a tall, slender figure. I guess you're kind of, your look is talking me into being like, nah, this might just be like seeing shit out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah.
Because everyone just sees shit out of the corner of their eye.
And if you're going in knowing that there's some sort of haunted history and lore in this place, you might like be more on edge with the stuff that you're seeing out of the corner of your eye.
Absolutely.
Whereas like if I saw something out of the corner of my eye in my apartment, I wouldn't be like, oh, it's a ghost. I'd be like, oh, it's probably just like, I don't know, fucking shadow of something moving across the wall or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I talked about the Weeping Tree already. So it's also called the Tree of Life. The tree where it's located, so people talk about how there was, I guess, treatment that happened there, or like, you know, psychiatric sessions where people, like, they would all sit by the tree and stuff like that. But that was also by the graveyard that was on the grounds too. And there's several unmarked graves that people assume are patients that probably passed away from various reasons. Yeah. So that is often said as well. And then the other one that potentially, so this one specifically was, they were seeing a tunnel. So there's a couple of smaller tunnels underneath the grounds, and seeing shadow figures in the tunnels as well. Again, I guess at first, so that's all of the things.
Okay.
I at first was like, oh, definitely haunted. Mental institution, those are always haunted. Like, those are almost like it's a cheat code when it comes to like this place being haunted and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I still think that it might be haunted, but I think a couple of those, like the tunnel people, maybe the shadow guy in the peripheral, like I'm starting to think that maybe those might not be, like, yeah, there might be less entities here than I originally, like, I am calling the skeptic, I might be calling skeptic on a couple of these.
No, I'm definitely calling skeptic on at least two of them.
Yeah.
The tunnels and the slender guy.
Yeah, so I'm starting to call skeptic on those two
the
as
nurse,
well.
The bed nurse, I'm like, that's creepy.
Yeah.
Like, someone standing over your bed.
And it would make sense if there was a nurse that worked there for a very long time.
But, so, kind of more complex skeptic explanation here. What if people are sleeping in a former institution? And so they're having dreams about, like, nurses. And then in that, like, in those moments where you have just woken up, like, you don't know what's dream state versus, like, real state.
That's fair.
And you just, like, you think you see something from your dream.
Yeah.
In real life, uh-huh, or something. And it's actually not there. And
yeah,
it's just
your, dude, mind, mind playing tricks. I had that happen to me once where I woke up one time. And, like, was dreaming about something and, like, saw a figure, like, for, like, 0.1 seconds. Like, it was, like, that, like, literally, I don't think it was a ghost. Like, I think my brain was still in dream mode as my eyes opened up. And there was, like, a 0.1 second where you could see, like, something.
Yeah.
And then it, like, once my brain flipped into, like, oh, we're fully, like, it disappeared.
I feel like that happens a lot. And I think that a lot of, like, quote-unquote ghost stories,
yeah,
are just people, like, they it is explained away by just, like, the difference in dream state versus, like, real state, and your mind is still
lucid.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
you're, like, you're still waking up, like, you're still, like, dude, it takes me, like, minutes to wake up.
Really?
So,
yeah. That's fair. That is fair. Yeah, so I do,
I'm 50-50 on this one.
Me too.
I'm like, because the like, night nurse is, she's still convincing.
Yeah.
Like, she's still.
Well, especially if we think that the woman in white, the matron, and the night nurse are the same entity.
Yeah.
Seeing her floating down the hallway in white, that is more convincing maybe than her just standing at the foot of your bed.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll go, like, 50.1% haunted.
Yeah. I can get behind that as well. Because I again, I was like, oh, cheat code, definitely haunted. And I was like, yeah, actually, I'm not sure it's as haunted as I thought it was.
Like, I think that this is a place where I would go in. Let's say that we were going to go investigate places, right? Like,
uh-huh,
if we're going to certain places, like, that we've covered.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, yeah, no, like, 100%. Like, I'd be going into those places, like, I'm going to get something
here. Yeah, you're going to get
Whereas
something.
This place, I'd be like, there's 50-50 chance I,
yeah,
get,
like,
something
see
or
and
don't.
Interact with something.
Yeah.
That's fair. Dude, I'm, yeah. So we're like, haunt? Question mark? Maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll go like, it's got the H-A.
Yeah.
It's still got to earn the unted.
Yes. It's got to earn the unted. But it's got the haw.
Maybe that's what we should start doing. We should start ranking it by
how
like
many letters.
How many letters it yeah. gets for either side.
Yep. I agree. I agree.
Like if we're on the side of nah, uh-huh. maybe it's like, oh, it gets the N and the A, but there's still the H.
Yeah.
Like we don't know.
Yeah.
There's still the H that yeah. we don't know.
Yeah. No, I can buy into that. Yeah, so I'll give it an HA. I'll yeah. give it an HA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Haw. I definitely would go and still look around.
If we could.
If we could, yeah, we can't get in here. But yeah, no, for sure. But yeah, no, I'm actually hot to trot on this like ghost hunting idea now.
We should.
We should. We should have done it like in the woods in Salem when it was October. Now it's like too cold to be outside and stuff like that.
There's plenty of places indoors
yeah.
in Salem that we could do.
But you just need access to them.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of like hotels.
Yeah, but that costs money. Well, yeah. I was trying to say like free, like I don't know. Sometimes you got to pay to play. But I was like just trying to think free. But oh well. All right. Well, that is this week's episode of Spirits on Spirits,
episode 38.
Yeah,
in
that's
the books.
Nuts. Absolutely nuts,
dude. We're only like 12 episodes or 14 episodes from a year.
Yeah.
Like a full on year.
That's crazy. Yeah, because it'd be 52.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to keep them coming. We appreciate you all. Please like, subscribe.
Follow.
Yeah, you know the drill. You know yeah. the drill. Every single thing you've ever watched has said those words. So just we'd
leave
appreciate
comments.
It. Yeah. Leave the comments.
DM.
DM. We appreciate you all. So,
we'll stay spooky.
See you later. Stay spooky. Peace.